Chapter 42, Beelzebub in America. 2 Dionysks later, when the inter-system ship Karnak had resumed its falling, and the confirmed followers of our respected Mullah Nasruddin had sat down again in their usual seats, Hassin turned once more to Beelzebub with the following words. Dear grandfather, may I remind you, as you told me to do, about those three-brained beings of the planet Earth? What are they called? The ones who breed and exist on the diametrically opposed side of the planet to where contemporary terrestrial civilization is flourishing? Those three-brained beings who, as you were saying, are great devotees of the foxtrot? Ah, you mean those Americans? Yes, that's it. Those Americans, exclaimed Hassin in delight. Of course I remember. I did promise to tell you something about those contemporary oddballs. And Beelzebub began thus. I happened to visit that part of the surface of your planet, now called North America, just before my final departure from that solar system. I went there from the city of Paris on the continent of Europe, which had been my last chief place of existence on that planet. I sailed there from the continent of Europe on a steamship, according to the custom of all contemporary what are called dollar holders, and arrived in the capital city of North America, the city of New York, or, as it is sometimes called there, the melting pot of the peoples of the earth. From the pier, I went straight to a hotel called the Majestic, which had been recommended to me by one of my Paris acquaintances, and which, for some reason or other, was additionally, though not officially, called Jewish. Having settled in this Majestic, I went the same day to look up a certain mister who had been recommended to me by another of my Paris acquaintances. On that continent, every being of the male sex is called Mister, who does not wear what is called a skirt. When I found this Mister, to whom I had a letter of introduction, he was, as is proper to every genuine American businessman, up to his ears in countless, as is said there, dollar businesses. I think I might as well remark here at the very beginning of my narrative about these Americans that almost all the contemporary three-brained beings who constitute the basic population of this part of the surface of your planet are occupied exclusively with these dollar businesses. On the other hand, the trades and professions indispensable to the process of being existence are practiced only by those beings from other continents who have gone there temporarily for the purpose, as he said, of earning money. In this connection, the conditions of ordinary being existence among your contemporary favorites, especially on this continent, have become completely, as it were, tra-la-la-la-la-la-la, or as your respected teacher Mullah Nasruddin would say, like a soap bubble that lasts only as long as the air is still. At the present time there, these surrounding conditions are such that if, for some reason or other, all the professional specialists necessary for their ordinary collective existence stopped coming from other continents to earn money, it is safe to say that within a month the whole established order of their ordinary existence would completely break down, for there would be no one among them who could even so much as bake bread. Chief cause of the gradual development of such an abnormality is, on the one hand, the law they themselves established in regard to the rights of parents over their children, and on the other hand, the setting up in children's schools of what are called dollar savings banks, with the aim of implanting in children a love of these dollars. Owing to this, and to various other peculiar external conditions of ordinary existence also established by them, this love of dollar business, and of dollars themselves, has become, in the common presence of each of the native inhabitants of this continent, on reaching responsible age, the motivating force of his feverish existence. That is why every one of them is always doing dollar business, and moreover, always several at the same time. Although the mister to whom I had a letter of introduction was also busy with these dollar businesses, he received me very cordially. When he read the letter of introduction I presented, a strange process began in him, which has been noticed even by certain of your favorites, it having become inherent in contemporary beings, and which they call unconscious preening. And this strange process took place in him because the letter I presented mentioned the recommendation of a certain other mister of my acquaintance, who, in the opinion of many, and also of this mister, was considered, as they call him behind his back, a smart operator, that is to say, a dollar expert. Although at first he was completely in the grip of this inherency, proper to your contemporary favorites, nevertheless, as he talked with me, he gradually calmed down and eventually told me that he was ready to place himself entirely at my disposal. Suddenly, however, he remembered something and added that to his profound regret, owing to circumstances entirely beyond his control, he could do nothing for me that day, but would have to postpone things until the following day, as he was extremely busy with important matters. And indeed, with the best will in the world, he could not have done differently, for these unfortunate Americans, governed as they are by these dollar businesses of theirs, can do what they please only on Sundays, whereas it happened that the day I went to see him was not a Sunday. There, on that continent, neither dollar business nor any others ever depend upon the beings themselves. On the contrary, it is your favorites who depend entirely on these businesses of theirs. In short, as that day was not a Sunday, this genuine American mister was unable to do as he pleased, that is, to go with us and introduce me to the people I needed. We therefore agreed to meet the following morning at a definite place, on their famous Broadway. This Broadway is not only the principal street of New York, but it is the longest street in any of the large contemporary cities of your planet. So the next day I set off for the place agreed upon. As the taxi which I took to this place did not happen to come from one of Mr. Ford's factories, I arrived too soon, and this mister was not yet there. While waiting for him, I began to stroll about, but as all the New York, what are called brokers, take their constitution before their famous quick lunch, in just this part of Broadway, the crowd became so thick that in order to escape it, I decided to go and sit down somewhere in a spot from which I could see my mister arriving. A suitable place seemed to be a nearby restaurant from the windows of which all the passers-by could be seen. By the way, I must say that nowhere else on that entire planet of yours, in the places of existence of any other group of your favorites, are there so many restaurants as in that city of New York. They are particularly numerous in the central part of the city, and the proprietors of these restaurants are chiefly Armenians, Greeks, and Russian Jews. And now, my boy, in order that you may rest a little from active mentation, I wish for a while to confine myself entirely to the form of mentation of our dear teacher Mulla Nasruddin, and to talk about a certain highly original custom which during the last few years has prevailed in these contemporary New York restaurants. Inasmuch as the power-possessing beings of this community have recently strictly prohibited ordinary beings from producing, importing, and consuming what are called alcoholic beverages, and have given corresponding orders to those beings on whom they rest their hope for their peace of mind, it is now supposed to be almost impossible for ordinary beings to obtain such liquids. Just the same, in these New York restaurants, various alcoholic beverages called arak, duzico, scotch whiskey, benedictine, vodka, grand marnier, and many other alcoholic liquids under every possible kind of label are made exclusively on what are called old barges lying at sea off the shores of that continent and are to be had in any quantity you please. The very tsimis of this practice lies in this, that if you point your little finger and cover one half of your mouth with your right hand while uttering the name of any liquid you fancy, then immediately, without more ado, that liquid is served at the table, only in a bottle purporting to be lemonade, or the famous French Vichy. Now, try with all your might to exert your will and to actualize in your presence a general mobilization of your perceptive organs, so that without missing anything, you may absorb and transubstantiate in yourself everything relating to just how these enumerated alcoholic beverages are prepared at sea on old barges off the shores of that continent. I regret very much that I failed to make myself thoroughly familiar with all the details of this contemporary terrestrial science. The only thing I managed to learn was that in every recipe for these preparations, there enter sulfuric, nitric, and hydrochloric acids, and most important of all, the incantation of the famous contemporary German professor Kishmanoff. This last ingredient, that is, Professor Kishmanoff's incantation for alcoholic liquids, is delightfully intriguing. And it works, so it is said, as follows. First, there must be prepared, according to some old recipe already familiar to specialists in the business, 1,000 bottles of liquid, precisely 1,000, because if there should be even one bottle more or one bottle less, the incantation will not work. These 1,000 bottles must be placed on the floor, and then a single bottle of any genuine alcoholic fluid, such as can be found anywhere, must very quietly be placed beside them and kept there for a period of 10 minutes, and then, very slowly, while scratching the right ear with the left hand, one must pronounce with certain pains the said alcoholic incantation. Thereupon, not only are the contents of 1,000 bottles instantly transformed into precisely that alcoholic liquid contained in the single bottle, but each of 1,000 even acquire the same label as that on the bottle of the genuine alcoholic liquid. Among the incantations of this incomparable German professor Kishmanoff, there are, as I learned, several positively stupefying. This famous German professor, a specialist in this branch, started inventing these remarkable incantations of his quite recently, that is, in the early years of the recent great European process of reciprocal destruction. When a food shortage occurred in his fatherland, Germany, the great professor, sympathizing with the plight of his compatriots, invented his first magic formula, which consisted in the preparation of a very cheap and economical chicken soup. This first formula of his is called German chicken soup, and is carried out in an extremely interesting manner as follows. Into a very commodious pot, set on the stove, ordinary water is poured, and then a few very finely chopped leaves of parsley are sprinkled into it. Both doors of the kitchen must now be opened wide, or, if there is only one door, a window must be opened wide. And, while the incantation is pronounced very loudly, a chicken must be chased through the kitchen at full speed. Thereupon, a most delicious chicken soup is ready, hot, in the pot. I heard further that during the years of that great process of reciprocal destruction, the beings of Germany made use of this magic formula on a colossal scale, as this method of preparing chicken soup proved in practice to be, as it were, good, or at least extremely economical. The point is that a single chicken could do duty for quite a long time, because it could be chased and chased and chased, until, for some reason or other, all by itself, the chicken, as is said there, went on strike and declined to breathe the air any longer. And in the event that the chicken, in spite of its having existed among your favorites, resisted the infection of hypocrisy and indeed no longer wished to breathe, then, as I afterward learned, the beings of that community called Germany established the following custom. Namely, when the chicken went on strike, its owners would very solemnly roast it in the oven, and to celebrate this occasion, would unfailingly invite all their relatives to dinner. In this connection, it's interesting to note that another famous professor of theirs, named Steiner, in the course of his what are called scientific investigations of supernatural phenomena, established, mathematically, that when these chickens were served at these invitation dinners, the hostess would always recite the same little speech. Each hostess, rolling her eyes to heaven and pointing to the chicken, would say with great feeling that it was a genuine Pamir pheasant, specially sent to them from the Pamirs by their dear nephew who was stationed there as consul for the great fatherland. On that planet there are incantations for every possible kind of purpose. The number of these incantations began to multiply after many of the beings of this peculiar planet had become specialists in supernatural phenomena, came to be called occultists, spiritualists, theosophists, violet magicians, chiromancers, and so forth. Besides being able to create supernatural phenomena, these specialists also knew very well how to make the opaque transparent.